Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
It's still hot. There's still trees coming down. So we're going to wait till it's safe to put firefighters in there, and then we'll go out and evaluate what the fire area looks like and how many of those structures were burned.
Residents near the Clear Fire wait to hear about damage to their subdivision. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, July 8th. Good evening. I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the remains of 2 Alaska Native girls who died at a boarding school a century ago are returning to Alaska.
She's going to be where she's wanted. We need her home.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Managers of the Clear Fire Response aren't saying much about structures destroyed or damaged by a wind-driven advance of the wildfire Wednesday evening. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, they say dangerous conditions and a methodical approach are delaying an assessment.
Intense flames swept north Wednesday, scorching a portion of the Kobe Road area off the Parks Highway south of Anderson and Clear. During a community meeting Thursday night, Incident Commander Al Lawson was asked how many structures burned.
We'd like to know that as well. The fire burned through there rapidly last night, and we're still evaluating the number of structures out there. And how we do that is we have a field observer that goes out, looks at the area that burned, GPSs those locations, and the degree of damage that's out there. The last thing we want to do is give false information, right?
Lawson added that the burn area is dangerous.
It's still hot. There's still trees coming down. So we're going to wait till it's safe to put firefighters in there, and then we'll go out and evaluate what the fire area looks like and how many of those structures were burned.
Lawson did not provide a timetable for the assessment or release of information, but did emphasize that no one was killed or hurt during what he described as extreme fire behavior.
At the end of the day, for me, it's getting everybody back into camp and making sure that folks are safe and out where the fire's not going to impact them. And we accomplished that.
The same sector of the fire that advanced so violently late Wednesday was active again yesterday, according to fire behavior analyst Forrest Ownby.
South wind is just clearing out that air. It's feeding the fire and it's helping it to grow.
Ownby says conditions are forecast to continue warm and dry, but relative humidity is predicted to increase over the weekend, bringing increased chance of thunderstorms with erratic winds. The Clear Fire is Alaska's top priority incident, with about 500 firefighters assigned to it. Air Operations Manager Dennis Morton said a Chinook helicopter is being brought in to increase water drop capacity.
Should be here in 2 days, and we'll base that aircraft out of Nenana, and that will come with a 3,000-gallon bucket. So that will really help out tremendously.
The Clear Fire has burned over 61,000 acres and is 8% contained. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
There were a dozen new wildfires identified in Alaska yesterday, and 244 fires are active in the state. Many blazes have been sparked by abundant lightning since June 28th.
In the last 10 days, we've had about 36,000 lightning strikes.
Fire Weather Program Manager Heidi Strader with the Alaska Interagency Coordination Center says the high number of recent lightning strikes is not unprecedented.
In 2015, which was another very large lightning season, the third week of June, we had 65,000 lightning strikes. So maybe about half of that is what we've had this last week or so, but it's still a big week.
Strader points to very unstable air causing thunderstorms to form pretty much around the clock.
That's been very common this last week, and that's not normal for us.
Strader says all the lightning is coinciding with very dry conditions.
We use the Canadian Forest Fire Danger Rating System, and right now our indices are showing that we are at near or at record high conditions for much of mainland Alaska.
Strader says red flag warnings, in effect across a large area of the interior since June 30th, do due to dry conditions and lightning, have been extended through Sunday.
That is unprecedented to have that many days in a row where we feel confident and it's pretty much panning out every day.
Over 2.4 million acres have burned in Alaska so far this season. Organizers with Planned Parenthood are holding four rallies in Alaska on Saturday to advocate for abortion access in the state. The rallies, scheduled for Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, and Homer, come after the Supreme Court overturned the landmark abortion case Roe v. Wade last month, ruling that there is no constitutional right to an abortion. Rose O'Hara Jolly, state director with Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates Alaska, says the rallies were planned in advance of the ruling.
It wasn't even planned because of the leaked draft. We figured since the court decided to hear a case around abortion access, that it would be releasing a decision that was different than one that had been previously decided.
O'Hara Jolly says the Planned Parenthood rallies will include musicians, speakers, and art exhibits, including a drag show in Juneau.
And then in Anchorage, we will have Smash the Platriarchy, where people can bring a plate or wall supplies last. You can write what you need to get your catharsis out on the plate and then safely smash it. And then we're going to turn those pieces into mosaic.
While Alaska has a strong right to privacy in its constitution and the ability to get a safe and legal abortion continues post-Roe, O'Hara Jolly says they are hoping that the rally can highlight disparities in the state.
So there's always been barriers to care, such as people living off the road system or those in domestic violence situations, people without transportation or in need of childcare. So we're really hoping that people will come together and we'll continue our work from before, which is expanding abortion access to make sure everyone has the same access to health care.
The Planned Parenthood events will happen the same day as a political rally held by former President Donald Trump in Anchorage. Trump appointed three of the six justices who overturned Roe. O'Hara Jolly says the abortion rights rallies were not planned to coincide with the Trump rally. And University of Alaska Anchorage leaders are responding to criticism ahead of that rally tomorrow at the Alaska Airlines Center featuring President Trump. Trump is set to campaign for three Republicans, U.S. House candidate Sarah Palin and U.S. Senate candidate Kelly Chewbacca and Governor Mike Dunleavy, who's running for re-election. Some students, alumni, and other community members have called for the university to cancel the event. In a written message to the community last week, UAA Chancellor Sean Parnell wrote that the university must keep freedom of speech in mind when reviewing facilities use requests. He said it would be, quote, unconstitutional to prevent a group from leasing university facilities based on speech that may occur at the facility or speech that we disagree with, end quote. Parnell emphasized that the university is not hosting the event. Rather, the Save America Political Action Committee is renting the Alaska Airlines Center. The group signed a lease agreement for $53,000 to rent the facility. A university spokesperson said UAA has not been paid up front. In a statement, student body president Katie Scoggin encouraged students to vote and to act safely and responsibly. At a meeting on Wednesday, Vice President Shannon Tejada acknowledged students' concerns.
We are not hosting this event, nor do we condone any of the violence, hate, and bigotry that is spewed from any character's event. So that is just not something that we condone here at UAA. And we understand the concerns that students have been raising. And we are speaking with administration about it.
Parnell also wrote that the university, municipal partners, and organizations in the area are working together to plan safety and security measures. So is the U.S. Secret Service. Tomorrow's rally is scheduled to start at 11 a.m. with entertainment followed by speeches. Trump is scheduled to deliver remarks at 4 p.m. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, biologists keep tabs on bats in Southeast after finding one with rabies.
So we have special ultrasonic microphones that we use to kind of eavesdrop on the bats.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's waters and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help stop aquatic hitchhikers by remembering to clean boots, boats, and trailer to remove plants, animals, and mud. Drain bilge, ballast, and buckets before leaving the area. and dry equipment before using it in a new body of water. Learn more at stopaquatichitchhikers.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Two Alaska Native girls who died more than 100 years ago at a boarding school in Pennsylvania, including one from Kodiak Island, will return home. Earlier this summer, the U.S. Army began the process of returning the remains of 8 indigenous children from the school to their families across the country. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports.
In 1901, 13-year-old Anastasia Ashawak was taken from an orphanage on Woody Island in the Kodiak Archipelago and sent to the Carlisle Indian Industrial School. Aleutic Museum Executive Director April Lactonin Counselor says Ashawak was part of a group of Alaska Native children sent to the school.
There were 11 students that went on that journey. There's records of their steamship travel, and then the remaining travel once they hit the West Coast was by train.
Indian boarding schools like Carlisle stripped Indigenous children of their culture and notoriously had poor conditions. Ashawak spent the next 3 years at the school before dying of tuberculosis at the age of 16. She was buried alongside other children in the school cemetery. For more than a century, she remained buried under a headstone inscribed with the wrong name. Counselor says records indicate that Ashawak was Aleutic and had ties to the former village of Kuguyak on the southern tip of Kodiak Island. Her family then moved to the village of Old Harbor, where many people still share her last name. Cassie Rowland is an Aleutic artist from Kodiak and one of Ashawak's descendants. Rowland says she never heard about the boarding schools from village elders when she was growing up.
They just didn't talk about it. It just was too painful for them.
Rowland has a daughter that's the same age as when Ashawak left Kodiak Island for the Carlisle School. Rowland says she's been honest with her daughter about what happened at Carlisle and other schools like it.
We've been learning about the Indian boarding schools before we even learned about our ancestors being part of it. And she's been asking questions, and I've been telling her the whole truth. I'm not the type of parent that's going to hide away.
Rowland and her daughter flew to Pennsylvania earlier in July, where they gathered with other members of their family as Ashawak's grave was dug up in preparation for her reburial in Alaska. Rowland says she brought paint to decorate the box that will carry the remains of Ashawak home. She planned to incorporate Aleutic and Russian Orthodox designs for the casket.
And then the bright colors of the island, just to bring her home, and lots of bright greens and blues, oranges, pinks. So just trying to make it look like a little girl.
Aleutic Museum Executive Director Counselor says when Ashawak returns to Kodiak, she'll receive services at the local Russian Orthodox Church in the city of Kodiak and an Aleutic ceremony at the museum. The Aleutic dancers, including Roland's daughter, also will perform. Ashawak and her family will then be flown to the village of Old Harbor for a graveside service followed by a potluck. Counselor says there's a sense of relief among the community that Ashawak will finally return home.
As many of us Native people know, we're kind of all related around the island. So although this is one individual, it's a moment for all Aleutic people to think about, you know, how important this kind of work is.
Rowland says a part of her will also be at peace when Ashawak is finally alongside members of her ancestors in Old Harbor.
She's going to be where she's wanted. We need her home, and she's gonna feel that, we believe. Her spirit will finally be at rest.
Rowland says she'll be processing why it took so long for Ashawak to return to Old Harbor for the rest of her life. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
Services and burial for Anastasia Ashawak will be Saturday, July 9th in Kodiak and the village of Old Harbor. The judge in the case of a former Sitka physician charged with multiple counts of sexual assault has declared a mistrial due to an inadequate jury pool. Sitka Superior Court Judge Jude Pate made the ruling Wednesday morning on the second day of jury selection after it became clear that there would be too few jurors left once both parties had dismissed undesirable prospects. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
78-year-old Richard McGrath is facing multiple criminal counts for allegedly assaulting 3 different women in his care while he was a doctor at Sitka Community Hospital in 2018. by sexually touching the victims when they were unaware that a sexual act was being committed. In empaneling juries for criminal trials in Alaska, attorneys for each side can drop as many as 11 prospective jurors through the peremptory challenge. In a high-stakes prosecution like McGrath's, attorneys commonly use all 11 challenges, especially when it's a complicated case with many witnesses, many of whom might be known to prospective jurors. The Sitka trial court called what initially appeared to be a sufficient jury pool for the case, but some of the names proved to be duplicates, there was one no-show, and some of the prospective jurors were excused out of hand by the judge for cause, some reason that would affect their capacity to rule impartially on the case. After a day and a half, that left 35 prospective jurors. Superior Court Judge Jude Pate explained to them that the math wasn't going to work.
Both parties are likely to use all of their 11 what we call preemptory decisions to pull people off, even though they could be fair and impartial, which would leave us with two of you, or actually one of you, and then we don't have enough jurors in reserve to make up the rest of the 14. So unfortunately, we won't be holding this trial in Sitka. It will be in another location in Southeast, possibly Juneau. We'll see.
At the time he delivered this information to the jurors, Judge Pate believed that the parties had agreed to seek a change in venue, but McGrath's attorney, John Cashin, said that was not the case and that he would vigorously litigate any motion to move the trial out of Sitka. Judge Pate apologized for the misunderstanding and said he wouldn't further consider a change in venue without a formal motion, adding that the courts in Juneau and Ketchikan likely were as backlogged as Sitka. Attorney Bailey Jennifer Wolfstead with the state's Office of Special Prosecutions agreed that she did not see a scenario at this point in which we are able to get to a jury. Judge Pate agreed to allow the parties time to confer on possible dates for another trial sometime later this year to be held in Sitka. In addition to facing criminal charges, McGrath is being sued in civil court for medical malpractice, along with the city of Sitka, which owned the now defunct Sitka Community Hospital. The civil trial in that case has been set for May of 2023. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Several Nenana area residents are asking the state to delay land sales in a 140,000-acre agricultural project just west of town. They say the state should talk further with local residents and complete studies on the ag project's soils and resources before continuing the sales. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The state held its first auction last month for 2,000 acres in the Nenana-Tochaket Agricultural Project as part of what state officials call an effort to improve Alaska's food security. But many area residents say they and their forebears harvested food from the land and its streams long before the project was proposed, and they doubt it will yield more food security.
When I grew up there, it was just bountiful resources.
Eva Burke grew up on land that's now within the Ag Project. She's Dene Athabascan, and she and her family, like many other area residents, spent summers at fish camp and winters working a trap line. But she says fish and wildlife populations there have, for decades, been declining.
We lived comfortably off the land. You just can't do that anymore because the resources are not there.
Burke thinks that's mainly because of poor state management, along with climate change impacts. She says if the state was really interested in food security, it would consider the impacts of large-scale development and reconsider plans to clear land and build roads throughout it.
If we've already seen the decline in the resources in my short lifetime, then definitely in putting more infrastructure and more people is definitely going to have a bigger impact. I've already seen it with my own eyes.
Fairbanks State Fish and Game Wildlife Research Biologist Tom Paragai says wildlife populations can rise and fall for many reasons, including wildfires. Paragai says another reason may be the new bridge over the Nenana River that's made access into the ag project easier.
So there's going to be more non-local people that may be going out into that area now, and so there you're going to be setting up competition for hunting and trapping and things like that.
Nenana resident Kat McElroy agrees and thinks that's one of the ways the project may actually reduce food security.
That land out there is the grocery store for a large segment of the population.
McElroy and Burke and others say much of the ag project land is not suited for agriculture, and they worry too much of that land is being sold for farming and livestock. They both say the state's moving too quickly on the ag project without considering alternative ways to develop it, and Burke says without completing studies on impacts on the land and its resources.
You need to slow down because you need to know your soils, and you're still doing that. You need to slow down because you need to know where the fish and wildlife are, and you're still doing that.
The state held its first ag project land auction last month, and State Agriculture Division Director Dave Shady says the state's planning another for next year and beyond. He says the state has studied the land and conducted surveys on it, including photographic and with LIDAR laser sensor. But he acknowledges some studies, like the one on soils, are incomplete.
When we have the full first 30,000 acres of the soil surveys, we'll do some more analysis.
McElroy also faults state officials for promoting so-called industrial agriculture, large-scale monocultural development that'll degrade the soils and shut out the locals from buying land.
Industrial agriculture has a really bad reputation for destroying land bases, and those concerns just weren't listened to.
The state offered 27 lots in the first land auction last month, ranging in size from 21 acres to just over 300 acres. Shady says the Agriculture Division has invited public feedback on the project, held several meetings, and adjusted its plans. And he says there'll be more chances to consult with the public in between land sales, especially from those who want to invest in the ag project.
If people don't want the land and they don't bid, well, then we'll know we don't have it right.
Shady says state officials have been studying the project ever since it was proposed 30 years ago, and now they want to move ahead on it. But Burke says the state's determination to move ahead without completing studies and further considering the community's concerns show that its leaders are more interested in selling the land than in protecting it. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
A bat in Juneau tested positive for rabies. That's a first for the city, and as KTOO's Claire Strempel reports, biologists say rabies isn't the only thing that makes this bat unusual.
Protocol for a suspicious bat is this. Without touching it, you put it in a box and leave it overnight. If it takes off, it's probably fine.
But it was still there in the morning, which indicated to us that something was wrong with it.
State wildlife biologist Roy Churchwell got a call from Animal Control on a Sunday in late June. He collected the bat, which had to be euthanized, and sent it to a state veterinarian in Fairbanks, who tested it for rabies.
So far, it's just an isolated case. We have sent a couple other bats up that haven't tested positive from the Juneau area, so it's not something we're too worried about yet.
This is only the sixth bat to test positive for rabies in Alaska over more than 45 years of testing, according to the state's Department of Fish and Game. All six of them were found in southeast Alaska, but this is the first in Juneau. Churchwell says Alaskans are unlikely to get rabies from a bat. The most likely route of exposure is if an unvaccinated pet tangles with a rabid bat and then passes it to a human.
The key is to make sure that your pets are all up on their vaccinations.
Besides having rabies, this particular bat was interesting to scientists because it's the first silver-haired bat biologists have caught in Juneau. Karen Blavis is a state wildlife biologist.
This is actually only the fifth or sixth specimen of silver-haired bat that we've ever collected in Alaska, so that was unusual.
They're distinct from the brown-haired bats that are typical in the region because they're bigger and have rounded rather than pointy ears. They're usually recognizable by silver hair. Blavis said their numbers seem to be increasing in southeast Alaska, but they've proven so difficult to catch that biologists have resorted to tracking them acoustically. Silver-haired bats have a distinct call. but you can't hear it.
So all the echolocation calls are above the range of human hearing. So we have special ultrasonic microphones that we use to kind of eavesdrop on the bats.
That's the call lowered to a frequency that humans can hear. Blavis is currently working with data from a citizen science tracking project to try and determine regional bat populations. She thinks the data will show the silver bats are moving north into the Juneau area. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strimple.
Dogs and their owners gathered in Palmer last weekend for a dock diving competition. Alaska Public Media's Laura Fillion went and has this report.
Dozens of people and their dogs gathered in Palmer on the 4th of July for the 2022 Alaskan Diving Dogs Qualifier. They're hoping to qualify for the Northwest Regional Competition in Seattle this September. Every few minutes, a dog rockets off the end of a dock into a 40-foot-long above-ground pool. Like Achilles, a German Shepherd, who jumps after a toy to the 23-foot mark.
Good boy, Achilles!
This weekend event includes a series of contests to test dogs' jumping and swimming abilities. Destiny Lytle is one of the event organizers and a dog handler.
There's the distance jump. We also have air retrieve, which is where we have a toy suspended 4 feet above the water, and it moves out in 1 foot increments. And then we also have hydro dash, which is a timed event.
Divers include pets, search and rescue dogs, and personal protection dogs. Kimberly Beam is one of the event's judges. Her Dalmatians also compete in dog shows, obedience competitions, and agility trials. But she says diving is more welcoming to newcomers.
It's a sport for anyone. Everyone's super friendly, welcoming, we're helping each other out.
That welcoming atmosphere drew Lytle to dock diving in 2015. She and two of her dogs were attending a different competition in the lower 48 and stopped by a pool where a dock diving contest was underway.
I got both my dogs up on the dock, and at the time it was a German Shepherd named Van and a Cardigan Welsh Corgi named Irene. And they both got up there and jumped, and they loved it. And the crowd loved the little corgi jumping off the dock. So I was like, at that point, I was hooked.
She and her parents run Alaska Dog Boarding and Training outside Palmer. They also host the Alaskan Diving Dogs Qualifier. Her dad, Sean Lytle, says he enjoys watching the dogs learn how to dive.
I like to watch the dogs that never done it, you know, and don't maybe even know how to swim. And then they learn to progress and go into the water on their own and come out on their own and then jump on their own. And I like to watch the progression. It's a lot of fun.
The Northwest Regional Competition will be held in September. 17 dogs earned spots to compete in Seattle, including the three elite winners, Ra, a Belgian Malinois, Achilles, the German Shepherd, and Nyx, a Labrador Retriever. In Anchorage, I'm Laura Fillion.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Wesley Early and Laura Fillion in Anchorage, Kirsten Dobroth in Kodiak, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, and Claire Strimple in Juneau. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.